Hello and welcome. It's Monday and it's Motivational Monday by Jim and Lucy. Today we have a real special Monday and you will have a jump start on this week with inspiration because our special guest today is real special. It's Rick DeLoretta with his amazing project called Jazz for Peace. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Lucy. How are you?
We're doing great. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Now, I wish our listeners could actually see Rick. This guy is the persona of someone. he's someone who, first, I would have loved to have been his first grade teacher, okay? Because I can see right now he was not a fly in the wall. He did just a hangout. He's someone who set the tone. He's in character. He's someone who is motivated. And he has a magnificent backdrop, and I wish you could see him sitting at his piano. So
yes, I do have, because this area where I am is really surrounded with Jazz for Peace mementos and all kinds of things. I mean, in front of me is a portrait that someone did who she paints people, great names that she admires, and somehow she included me in all of these, you know, major figures that she paints.
Yes.
And in back of me is a painting from Nepal. There's two paintings. One is someone who painted me performing in a band at Birdland Jazz Club, and she just came and she chose that night to come out to see the band, and she painted us, all of us. And that's a picture of me with the band at Birdland. And then in back of that, which I don't even know if you can see it, it's kind of in the corner. It's a picture in Nepal. And I was in Nepal and I was in a cave all the way across the Himalayas because I flew into Kathmandu and I was helping this outstanding cause. And they said, tomorrow, we're taking you all the way across the Himalayas in one of these world's most dangerous roads that you see on TV, you know, where you're like 8,000 feet up and no survivors if anything happens, those kind of things. And they took me all the across the limit. I said, why are you doing that? They said, because we need you to see who you're helping. This is, you know, we're an organization here, but we help people in this place called Hetauda, Nepal. And when they took me to this place, Hetauda, which was amazing, you know, for like us Westerners to go, because you've never seen anything like it. And the tourists would never see that this place. You know what I mean? Like you never. So I met them and I saw their music and they danced for me and they did their traditional dances and music and big celebration. And then they took me in this cave to meet this kind of underground artist. And they had a flashlight and they were showing me his paintings and he was with me. And I just did this. It was like, you know, you have to take a chance sometimes. And I'm not an expert on painting. I know a little bit, but I'm not an expert. But I saw he had this painting of Ganesh, which is an elephant deity called Ganesh. If you ever talk to anyone in that side of the world, then this elephant is a big deal. And so the other big deal is the cow. Cows were laying down in the middle of the road and there was nothing anybody could do about it. And they know it, you know, because they're sacred. So they just do whatever they want, and you have to go around them because they're sacred, and they know it darn well. So they just sit there and look at you. It's really funny. But this thing with the elephant deity, it was spectacular painting because it was done in Cubist fashion. And I just happened to say, as taking a guess, because I knew if I knew I could get some points if I happened to be right, and if I was wrong, maybe it wouldn't be such a big deal. I told the guy, the translator, I said, please tell him that I'm so fascinated with this painting. It's so amazing. And what amazes me is that he was influenced not by the Cuban, not by the cubism of Picasso, but by the cubism of Georges Braque, who was another guy. Georges Braque kind of came before Picasso and kind of invented cubism. And, Picasso took that and ran with it, but Braque may have been the originator of this cubist type of painting. Well, I just happened to be right. You know, I'd love to tell you that I really knew that. I didn't, you know, I just was kind of, let me give it a try and see if it flies. He was so impressed that I had, you know, he thought I was an art genius. You know what I mean? Because I nailed it, but I had to guess. Anyway, when I get back to the concert in Kathmandu, all the way back there now, across the road, the crazy road that people are, you know, throwing up on because it's so scary. And we get back to Kathmandu to the concert. There's this thing with a, like a veil over it. I have no idea what it is. It's something with a veil over it. They know what it is. They'll let me know what it is, whatever. And there's a kind of intermission. And they unveil this painting, and he had given me the painting. So now I got to take this painting all the way back because I don't have any check, and you can't check this thing in. You know what I mean? It's in a frame. I have to carry it on the plane. I mean, it's absolutely crazy what I had to do to get this painting back with all my other luggage, all by myself, all trekking it all the way back to my apartment where it sits now. But so that's just one little story. And they're in this, what you guys are looking at, and this is, I guess, only audio. That's why you're saying that they wouldn't be able to see it. It's only audio when it comes out. Yes. Yeah, so only you guys can see it. Every little thing you're looking at, it's like a coral reef. It has its own, every little microscopic thing has a story like that. So we'd be here for 5 days just to describe what's behind me, let alone what's to the right or to the left. So you what you said is absolutely perfect. And you're right, the listeners, that, well, we'll just have to have the listeners over someday. That's all. We'll bring them by.
You know, listening to Rick here is like having a Red Bull for lunch. And this guy, my goodness.
Well, Rick, it's very interesting that you started your story from travel experiences and art. Because that was exactly my next question. No matter what are the traditions, where we come from, what is the culture, we all get inspired, many of us, from art, different forms of art, and absolutely each and every one of us from music. What do you think the main reason for that?
Well, like, for example, you're from, I'm guessing, somewhere in Eastern Europe or Russia or some. What? Where are you from originally?
Ukraine.
Ukraine. So, you know, I've been over in that region. I've performed over in that region, you know, Croatia and places like that. And I've also had Ukraine and Russian people come to see me play. And actually, there's a Ukrainian restaurant in the East Village that caters to artists. They love artists. And we would go in that restaurant and they would, you know, they would have a special feeling for us because we were in the arts, you know. And when I say Ukraine and Russia, I mean, you might think they're at war, but they're, you know, a lot of times these are people like the Hatfields and the McCoys, or, you know, the mother and the daughter. They actually probably love each other. You know, love, hate is often love with issues. So when I see a Ukrainian person, I see someone, it reminds me of people who love music from that region of the world. And I've had Russian groups of people that would follow me to my gigs here in New York City because they live here and they work in the jewelry industry. And they would show up, they'd be down there and they'd be, hey, Rick, you know, we just want to let you know we're taking you out after this. We came to see you play. And they take me to these Russian places, or and sometimes Ukrainian, if they were Ukrainian, that I would never be able to go to, even though I live in New York City, I would never. So they would experience my music, which they appreciated, fortunately for me. And then I would experience their world here in New York City that my friends would have never been to that place. Sometimes you have to go in the back door. It's like, it's all, you know, it's all the windows are, but it looks like it's closed. And then you go in the back and it's packed with people from that region who are all speaking that language and they all know each other. So it's a, it's kind of a subculture music, you know, just like all of our little dialects and things we speak have our own little subcultures. And I think that's what brings people together. Except the beautiful thing about this subculture, it's universal. So when I speak jazz, I can speak more deeply with a Ukrainian jazz musician than I could trying to speak Ukrainian to him, or him trying to speak English to me. So all of a sudden, we both speak jazz, and now we have this, we have a connection that's could blow away our own friends. You know, the connection we have with our own friends. So that's what it is. It unites people in a positive way and also in a universal way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So tell us more about Jazz for Peace.
Well, it started, you know, Jazz for Peace is something, I think if you ever talk to a musician, they'll probably tell you that they know some of the things that, you know, Jazz for Peace is presenting. They know them in their heart because musicians play, and as they go along on their journey, it just starts to occur to them that, wow, music is cutting through boundaries and barriers that language can't do, and that all of these other ways of communication can't do. And it cuts through and it touches people's hearts in a positive way. It unites people, it brings people together. And there's all kinds of historical, you know, things to back it up. There's a story in Nepal when I was a kid, I saw this documentary. And, you know, I was a kid in, I believe I was at New England Conservatory in Boston. And back then, we didn't have the internet. So the cool thing to do was to go to the movie theater that showed the alternative movies. You know what I'm saying? Movies from around the world. Movies that, not, you know, everyone else was going to see Spider-Man 2 or whatever, which it was actually before that. But you know what I mean? They were going to see the most popular. And we were like the cool people. We're going to go see something from some region of the world that we don't even know and watch this movie. And I happened to choose a movie called Song of the Weeping Camel. And this is a story that's going to resonate. This almost tells you about Jazz for Peace, just this story. And it's the story of a guy who went out to film these people in Tibet, which is very close to Nepal, the story I was previously telling you. We're only a few miles away now in Tibet. And he's filming the family. And while he's filming them, they have an issue with a camel. And these camels are really, they live off the land, so everything's important. The seals are important. The whales are important. The camels are. And this camel gives birth to an albino camel, and the mother will not accept the baby. And they won't, they're not having it because they need this baby camel to be part of their, you know, part of their family, part of everything that's part of it. You know what I mean? So the mother not accepting the baby is bad news for them and the community. So they're keeping this camel alive, an albino camel. And this guy changes the whole trajectory of his film. He's like, what the heck is going on here? And he starts filming that now because that's the big story of the day. It's like a big, you know, a big crisis in the community. So they're feeding it with like little baby bottles for the kid. You know, they would have their own kids. They're feeding the camel, trying to keep it alive, trying to figure out what to do. And they're meeting, and he's decided now to make this documentary about this story because it's so fascinating. What are we going to do next? And they try this. It's almost like you see in the cartoons, you know, where the guy's trying to get a Roadrunner. How he tries this, he tries that. They're doing that. They're like trying to get Roadrunner or whatever. They're trying to solve the problem with this way and that way. And they try this and they try that. And finally, in the movie, it's just filming it. He's just filming what he sees. We are all out. What are we going to do now? And they look at each other and they say, that's it. We got to go get the musician. That's what they say. We got to go get the musician. So now these are like five people trying to solve this problem. They've decided nothing's going to fix this but music. And two of them go on a donkey for 3 or 4 days now, because there's no cars, there's no electricity. The only way to get this guy, you got to take a donkey. You can't call him. You can't, no email. You got to ride a donkey for days. I don't know if it's 4 days or 2.5 days or whatever, but they ride a donkey, and this guy's got to film this now for days to reach this region where this musician lives, this musician healer. And they grab this guy and they just say, hey, this is the deal. We're all out of bullets and we got to bring you up there. So he comes up with his instruments and he puts instruments on the mother camel that resonate. So four people pulling this mother camel out because the mother camel, you know, he wants nothing to do with this whole idea. They put all these instruments on him. Then they pull the little baby over. He doesn't want to come. He thinks the mother's going to kill him. You know, he's just not accepted and he's afraid of his mother. They bring him over and they put some other things around that are going to resonate the sound. And he's got everything all set up with all these instruments. Most of them are resonating like things. Like you'll see like the inside of a guitar, how it resonates, you know, that has a hole in it and has the little hollow things. Now he brings out a violin and he starts playing for hours and hours and hours and hours. And at some point, the mother starts crying her brains out and tears coming flying down of its eyes, and accepts that camel. That's it. She accepts the camel. She loves the camel. In other words, now she loves this camel. She, in other words, as much as she was rejecting it, she's on the other spectrum. She's so sorry that she ever rejected it, and she just wants to be with this camel for her own flesh and blood. She's in love with this camel like you've never seen. And that's the end of the story. But that's the power of music. And so when I got to a situation where I was on the roof of a building in New York City on the Lower East Side, less than a quarter of a mile away from the World Trade Center, and I was tipped off by a photographer who had been taking pictures of me the day before and who had a job on Wall Street. And she told me something's up. And I said, listen, I don't know what you're talking about. It's probably something stupid, like someone flew a kite into the, broke a window. What could it be? I go up on the roof of my building because I'm on the fifth floor. I walk right on the roof. And there I am watching that and watching it from, like I said, a luxury box seat. So, I had no idea. I didn't know anything. I didn't know that I was one of the few people that was going to see that event live with such an incredible sight to the building. And what could I do? I'm in it. And all I had at the end of that day was a poem. And the poem was called Jazz for Peace. And I've just been trying to live up to the words of the poem ever since. That's all I've been doing. So all these great things that happened to me, it's a conduit, I'm just trying to live up to the words of a poem. And if some good things happen along the way, then that's fine with me.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
That's an amazing story. And I've heard, dear listeners, you didn't hear before we started, but Rick is ready to share that universal language, the piece of that universal language with us.
Yes. So what I'm going to do, and since I told that poem, I might as well stick that in here. This is kind of something I make up on. I do something new for every podcast. It's always different. Right now we're in spring. I don't know when this will air, but just so your listeners know, it's the springtime. So I'm going to take a standard called You Must Believe in Spring. And I'm going to do a little, melody of that, and then kind of take off in something. And hopefully I'll include some of this Jazz for Peace poem in this free improvisation so that you can get an idea of what I ended up with, at the end of the day of 9/11. When lonely feelings chill the meadows of your mind, just think, if winter comes, can spring be far behind? Beneath the deepest snows, a secret of a rose is merely that it knows you must believe in spring. Just as the tree that's sure its leaves will reappear, it knows its emptiness is just the time of year. The frozen mountain dreams of April's melting streams. How crystal clear it seems, you must believe in spring. You must believe in love and trust it's on its way. Just as a sleeping rose awaits the kiss of May, so in a world of snow, of things that come and go, where what you think you know, you can't be certain of. You must believe in spring and love. Jazz for peace coming through the trees, and in my heart it fills me like a celebration. I see the light and I want to follow, inspired by the past contributions of those that came. Privilege. I hear jazz.